Hello and welcome back to We the People, your favorite weekly Nintendo podcast. My name is Michael and I'm joined by my twin brother, player two since the womb, Matthew.
Yo!
Say hello.
Hello.
So it's time to get into a little more Nintendo news and happenings from around the globe. But before we do that, if you want to do a couple things for us, and I know you just met us, but you know, if you want to do something nice for us, go ahead and subscribe to our new YouTube channel. We brought Cotrello Games to YouTube, and we got a full playthrough of Mario 64 with me and Trevor on it. Go check that out. The link will be in the description. As well as, if you like the show, give us a little bit of a fighting chance in the algorithm by giving us a nice review on your podcast service of choice. But with all that said, let's get into the first item of news. So we got a little thing happening in Rayman today, or this week. We start with Michel Ancel, the creator of Rayman and other series like Beyond Good and Evil, has retired from the game industry after a 30-plus year career. Ancel will pursue a career in wildlife as he steps away. In his farewell Instagram post, he notes that Wild and Beyond Good and Evil 2 are still on the way. Matthew, thoughts?
Well, as a huge Rayman fan, it's disappointing. Well, I shouldn't say disappointing, but it's just kind of, you know, I guess all good things come to an end. And, you know, like I've mentioned, you and I are both big Rayman fans, probably me more so in particular. I've honestly played just about every Rayman game, except for those Raving Rabbids games. No, thank you. I actually bought both of them, but I've just never really actually played them. Once I found out they're full of like commercial music and things like that, I just don't really have any interest. But yeah, as a huge Rayman fan, it's sad, but you know, he seems like he's in a really good place and he's moving on to a passion project, so to speak. And you know, anytime you're studying and benefiting wildlife, I'm all for it. But I'm just more so wondering what's going to happen with Rayman, because we know Beyond Good and Evil 2 is still in development. He said that the project's in a really good place and doesn't need him. It's sustainable where it's at with the team that they have. I'm just more so curious about Rayman, because it's the last time we saw a mainline entry in the series was Rayman Legends, which was an incredible game. But, you know, it still sold well. It was still a success for Ubisoft, but I don't think it was as big a success as they wanted it to be, you know, with the whole debacle of delaying the game for 7 months so they could make it multi-platform, and then it literally released on the same day as Grand Theft Auto V, which is one of the best-selling games of all time. So just never really got a great chance to succeed as a brand-new game. But it's interesting because I was just mentioning to you this morning that the Ubisoft in, how do you say it, in Montpellier, or it's a part of France, correct?
One would assume.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how to pronounce.
I forgot the, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's M-O-N something, I don't know. Anyway, that's not important. What's important
Montpellier.
Is
Montpellier. I'd say Montpellier.
Yeah, yeah,
that's what I'm going with that.
Yeah.
Montpellier.
Yeah, so it's funny because they started sharing some images today that appear to be from a Rayman game. Like, there's one level that closely resembles a level called Tonic Trouble, which is a throwback level. I believe it's from the original Rayman game, if I'm not mistaken. But they showed some images, and then, you know, they quickly backtracked and said, hey, this, you know, which I appreciate the transparency if it is true, but said that they don't have any information regarding the Rayman license at this time. Which is disappointing, because I know when I woke up, I saw some information about a potential Rayman leak, and I was like, oh man, this is what I've been waiting for. You know, there's a couple game series I'm waiting for to make comebacks. Donkey Kong's one of them, Crash Bandicoot is another, but we know the new one's on the way in just another week. And then Rayman would be another, where I really want to see Rayman return to prominence, because I really enjoy the games, 2D or 3D. But so it's I don't know how I feel about it. I don't know if I should be excited that they're showing images that are clearly from the Rayman franchise. There's even one that's an image of the back of Rayman's head, which it does beg the question, why create that concept art if it's not for a new game. Some people are speculating that it could be for the long-rumored television show that they've been planning on doing, or it could be some anniversary collection edition. What I'm really hoping it's not is that it's not for an app game. If it's for an app game, I'm going to cry you a river. Trust me. So, all in all, yeah, that's why, you know, so back to the original point about Michel Ancel. I'm glad Beyond Good and Evil 2 is sustainable and it doesn't need his help any longer, that game's going to see the light of day. I just wonder what it means for the Rayman franchise, because at this point, I think Ubisoft's longest droughts for game series are now Rayman and Splinter Cell. Prince of Persia would have been another, but they're getting that... pretty awful looking remake.
That remake's looking dry.
Yeah.
That remake is looking pretty dry.
Yeah, it's hard to even call it that. It looks like it's more of a port than Super Mario 3D All-Stars is, but it's not much more, honestly. Like, you know, and I'll say, even if Super Mario 64 in the 3D All-Stars collection looked like that, I'd still be happy with it, but I will say it's not much more effort put into it than Nintendo put into Super Mario 3D All-Stars, so... I digress.
Yeah, well, I think, honestly, you know, you mentioned not knowing what to think about it. I think you think nothing about it. You see the pictures and you're like, oh, cool, they're doing some Rayman stuff over there at the Rayman house. I mean, the truth is that game developers are constantly iterating on their ideas, checking out, you know, whether new game concepts will work, what different things would look like. And I'm sure there's just pitches for Rayman games every single year. But, you know, with every commitment being this gigantic multi-million dollar endeavor, you can't say yes to everything. And so you need to wait till there's a really good idea, something like Rayman Origins or Legends. And so we'll see what comes of this. There's been murmurings of a Rayman Netflix show. It could be that. I don't know. I don't even know that, like, we want a Rayman show more than we want a Rayman game at this point. But but as far as Michel Ancel's career goes, I mean, he had this. It seemed like he had this Miyamoto sort of role at Ubisoft, where he would be on the ground floor of a lot of ideas and craft worlds and characters and concepts instead of all the nitty-gritty development work that takes the other 4 years of a five-year development cycle. Beyond Good and Evil 2, as far as I'm concerned, is vaporware until it is sitting inside my system. I loved the last showing that they had years ago, and they haven't showed, like, anything since. And, you know, it'll come out or it won't. I'm sick of, like, getting emotionally attached to games just to wait endlessly groaning for their arrival. And the same thing with Wild. Wild is a cool concept, a cool idea. Haven't seen it for years. Will it ever come out?
Oh, yeah, I forgot maybe. About that one. That's why I didn't even mention that. I completely forgot.
Yeah, he mentioned it in his Instagram post, but yeah, it's just, anyway. But yeah, if you're looking for some wildlife goodness, you can go follow Michel Ancel on Instagram.
One thing I'll also say about Rayman that's pretty interesting is out of nowhere, Ubisoft just did like a 2-hour stream of Rayman Legends just the other day. So it does seem like they're working on something. And, you know, one thing that people have speculated a lot because of a bunch of Rayman trademarks that had been renewed pretty recently, as of a few months ago, was that he might be making his way over to Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, which would also be incredible. I would love to see him and Crash make it into the second Fighter's Pass. And we've been waiting a long time to see that next character. So who knows? Maybe that concept art for a level is actually concept art they were giving Masahiro Sakurai for a stage in Ultimate. You never know. But speaking of leaks coming from, or potential leaks coming from the company themselves, we got to talk about Kirby Fighters too, man.
Yeah, let's go ahead and introduce that whole thing. So Kirby Fighters 2. Oh, man.
This game has had
kind of like an interesting journey. So, of course, as you're mentioning, Nintendo happened to accidentally leak it on a games list portion of their website. It turns out either that leak was just a few days early, or some people are thinking that they released it because of the leak. I don't think that that's the case. I don't think this is like the type of big game that would have had a giant marketing push anyway. This is something that would have been mentioned in a direct and then released the day of. And I think since, you know, the directs have been happening in a strange fashion all this year, that it was dropped in this fashion instead. But in any case, we have Nintendo Life with a nice write-up on the whole debacle, because it kind of came and went on the internet. Like, the webpage was, of course, edited to remove it shortly after people discovered it, but there's some screen caps, the tweets and stuff there if you are interested. But yeah, on the Game Finder of the portion of Nintendo's website, it was accidentally leaked with the write-up of the game, that shows us that this is going to be a brawl out of all the copy abilities. There's going to be a new wrestling ability. Bandana D, DDD make appearances as playable characters. And they noted it for $20. But let me just tell you the little journey for this game, because this game has kind of like a long life. So you remember Kirby Triple Deluxe, yes?
Oh, yeah.
So Kirby Triple Deluxe had a sub-game, as every Kirby game does. Like, you know, most recently Star Allies had the Lumberjack game and the baseball game. One of the sub-games for Kirby Triple Deluxe was this Kirby Fighters game. And so you could brawl it out with, I think, like 6, maybe 8 different abilities. And it was the exact same concept as this. That game was later repackaged, and they added a bunch of abilities and some new modes and some window dressing. And then they then sold that as Kirby Fighters Deluxe on the eShop for $7. And now the game gets a sequel on the Switch for $20, and it will sport some of the abilities introduced in Star Allies, a lot of the graphics and assets from that game, and some of the characters like we saw Gooey is in the game now. And guessing at that $20 price point, I'm guessing they're not going the microtransaction route that Super Kirby Clash took. I haven't had a chance to play the game, so that's something that I hope. I don't think they're going that route, and that's great. I mean, this is a cool little game. It's not reinventing the wheel. It's just battling with Kirby abilities, and they kind of change and balance the abilities to make it a little more fair, because obviously in the main playthrough there are certain abilities that are just, I mean, if you play your cards right with the yo-yo, you're literally invincible for whatever you want, based on which attacks you're using. But they do a little balancing act to these. It's going to have some online play, a story mode, and it seems like a pretty good $20 get.
Yeah, no, I think it looks really exciting. I've never played the original Kirby Fighter subgame within, you said it was within Robo Blast, correct?
Triple Deluxe.
Triple Deluxe, that's right. I don't know why. I always get a lot of those 3DS Kirby games mixed up. But anywho, no, I think it's awesome. I you know, saw some gameplay footage of it, and it looks incredible. Or I shouldn't say incredible, but just like a really neat concept. You know, it's almost like a dumbed-down Super Smash Bros. And, you know, a lot of people have already started sharing their combo videos and things like that, and it looks like it's actually got a lot of depth to it that can be explored. So I'm really, really looking forward to trying it. I'm more so just curious, though, how this ended up getting out. It, to me, you know, you never typically see the company that is making the game, especially Nintendo, just leak their own game. And I agree with you. I don't think it was anything of the nature that, oh, they leaked it, so now they got to release it. You know, because they could have just announced it after it got leaked and just said, oh, it's coming in November. You know, I don't think that means they have to release it right away. I don't really understand how those things correlate, but I'm just wondering who messed up on that. And it's kind of reminiscent of, you remember when there was the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate Direct in August of 2018, the one where we got the Belmonts and King K. Rool? There was that music track that was uploaded, and it was the Bloody Tears music track from Castlevania, but it played a different music track, and that's how they found out on YouTube it was a placeholder for an upcoming announcement. So Simon already got leaked before the announcement happened in the direct, and it's kind of reminiscent of that. But, you know, I just wonder if somebody lost their job over this, because it seems like a really poor mess up.
Yeah, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I I think just whoever was in charge of updating that part of the website got their dates wrong, hit the wrong key, like one of those things. I mean, these sort of corporate goofs happen all the time, but this is a particularly large one. Now, I think if this was, you know, Mario 3D All-Stars or something, some new DK game, some Pokemon project, something big, then I think there'd probably be a bigger deal. But Kirby, that's what I like about Kirby. Kirby's just around. He's just consistent. There's just like a new Kirby project that we're going to get every year or two. And, you know, it's just chill. It's just chill. Nintendo doesn't necessarily, I don't think they own HAL Laboratory, but they're just a great partner for them. And, you know, they just do good work
now
together.
Part of, haven't they moved their office of operations, their main headquarters, into Nintendo's headquarters in Kyoto?
I think I might have heard that.
Yeah, yeah, I believe that they have, and that they've increased their staff as well. So a lot of people think that there might be a big Kirby game on the way. I know I've heard rumors about that, that there might be some 3D Kirby game on the horizon, which I would love to see. I think Kirby is kind of like Donkey Kong in the sense that it has so much untapped potential, but at the same time, they have a large frequency of games. And to me, that's the only frustrating thing with Kirby, is I feel like it's one of Nintendo's franchises, one of the only ones that you get games all the time, but you have no idea what you're going to get. You might get a Kirby's Return to Dream Land, and it's an incredible game, and it's a lot of fun. And then you might get Kirby Star Allies, which is fun, don't get me wrong, but it just, you know, it's average, to say the least. Like, I don't think it's anything spectacular. It's a fun game. I'm glad that it's co-op. You get to play with your friends. I enjoy it a lot from a lot of perspectives like that. But I think overall, if you're being objective, it's about a, you know, 7 out of 10. It's a fun time. But, you know, you never know what type of quality you're going to get from Kirby.
Well, I think it's always been kind of consistent in kind of what you're getting. The size, like, they're all very consistent, and that, you know, for better or for worse. And I think the problem with Star Allies is that, like, what it was bringing new to the table also was a little detracting, in that, like, you have these gigantic ability mergers that do so much damage and light the world on fire that nothing's really, like, challenging or causing you to think anymore. Whereas some of the neat things that the 3DS games did, like Triple Deluxe or Robobot, was they introduced new mechanics like the giant mech suits, or in Triple Deluxe there was kind of a layered stage similar to that of Little Big Planet. And so there'd be some different level design that you would do there. But yeah, I think the abilities were just too good and the screen was too crowded for Star Allies to truly succeed. But that being said, every time I play it, I like it a little more. So, I mean, it's just...
Yeah, I agree. You know, and it's been one of the best updated games as well. They've continuously made updates to that game with adding more characters from Kirby's past that have just made it better and better and better. So I appreciate the support that game has gotten for the amount of time that it did. I think that was really awesome. I just think in general, there's little changes I feel like they could make to the Kirby franchise that would make it so much better. Like, I think Kirby's Return to Dream Land is a perfect example of, like, just speed up the game. You know, like, Kirby's Return to Dream Land is so much faster than Star Allies, and I think it's much more fun as a result of it, and it's also a lot more difficult. And I also think they've gotten so ability happy, so to speak, that they love putting in abilities that just make the game really easy. But I feel like Kirby's the most fun at this point. Like, you and I talk about this all the time, but vanilla Kirby's actually the most fun when you don't have any abilities, when you have to wait for the boss to make their move and you have to suck up the star and shoot the star back at them, or you have to use the sliding move. That's when Kirby's the most fun. But I think Nintendo honestly looks at Kirby as one of their entry series to platformers, but also one of their experimental franchises where they can play around with new ideas the same way they do with Yoshi, where they're like, let's make him yarn this time, you know, or let's make him a ball that you control with the stylus in Kirby's Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, you know, which is a very fun game, by the way. But, you know, I think the way some people have pointed this out, but that, you know, Nintendo may look at it as like Kirby and or Kirby's like your easy entry level game into platformers. Mario and Yoshi are more like your intermediate, like they're still pretty easy, but they're kind of hard. They challenge you a lot more. You can't just float through the air like Kirby or rely on really good abilities. And then Donkey Kong Country would be like the expert platformer, so to speak, where, like, you know, you kind of work your way up that chain. And I think that would make a lot of sense. I don't know if Nintendo actually looks at it that way or if it's just a coincidence, but I look at Kirby now as they kind of want to make it that entry-level series and also the series that they want to use for experimentation with other gameplay ideas.
Yeah, I have a theory that, I mean, most of the experimentation just comes from HAL being independent of Nintendo. I mean, they're close partners, but Nintendo doesn't have, I mean, I'm sure they have a seat at the table for, like, whatever they're working on, but they don't have the final say-so for whatever games HAL makes, and that's why you've seen them branch out into some other projects, like, what was it called? Part-Time UFO on iOS and Android devices. And so, yeah, it's always interesting to see what they do because they're not afraid to jump out of their comfort zone. But at the same time, they have a pretty consistent drip of, like, if you like that side-scrolling Kirby gameplay, my goodness, is there a catalog for you to explore on whatever Nintendo system you're on. So, so I like that. You know, they're fairly consistent with Kirby, and I think that's great for Kirby fans, and great for people having somewhat of an expectation of, like, what they can expect to get with their Nintendo system. There has been a lot of, like, interviews and talks where they're wanting to expand what Kirby's capable of, and my hope is that they take Kirby into the third dimension. Because I think, honestly, that would be a whole lot of fun. I mean, you know, some sort of collectathon or 3D world action type of game, I think, could work really well for Kirby's abilities. You've got all sorts of things that you can play with. I mean, that's kind of like, I mean, when you think about it, Mario Odyssey is basically just giving Mario Kirby's abilities. Like, you throw the hat on and then you're a hammer bro, but what's the difference between becoming a hammer bro and getting the hammer ability?
Right.
You know, they're very similar concepts, so I think Kirby would actually do well in the third dimension. Hope they do that, but we will have some Kirby Fighters 2 impressions for you. I didn't want to just, like, jump in for 5 minutes and come up with some, like, you know, lukewarm interaction with it. So next week we'll talk deeper about how the game turned out. We'll have a chance to play through the entire story mode, which I think is over 5 hours. Pretty impressive for a $20 game. And so, yeah, we'll have a little more info on that next week. But let's talk about this Microsoft thing, Matthew. Now, I know, we're a Nintendo podcast, but when gigantic things happen in the game industry that will also affect Nintendo, it is prudent to talk about them here. So, Microsoft, I'm sure, as you've heard already, has started the process of acquiring ZeniMax Media, the parent company of studios like Bethesda and id. Of course, they have the properties like Skyrim and Doom and all that fun stuff. But this news comes from a blog post from news.xbox.com. Phil Spencer, the current head of Xbox, reports that Microsoft is acquiring ZeniMax and all the game franchises attached to them. And all of those games that are now under development are under Microsoft's control now. So while Phil Spencer said that they'll honor current exclusivity negotiations like Deathloop being a console exclusive on PS5, in the future, they will assess what platforms these games can appear on. This announcement came a day before pre-orders went live for a new family of Xbox systems coming this fall, which is definitely, definitely always the plan. So Matthew, tell me what you think about this.
I think it's a game changer, honestly. I mean, I was just ready to write Xbox off as a console. I just think, you know, a lot of people, you know, there's a popular YouTuber who had been talking about that for a while, that he feels like Xbox is going the route of Sega, where they're going to be a software business, if anything, when it comes to video games. Obviously, Microsoft as a company is very successful when it comes to computer technology and software, but as a video game company, or what they've done in the video game marketplace hasn't really been anything crazy. You know, like, out of the three consoles that they've already released, the only one that did pretty well was the Xbox 360. And, you know, that still ended up selling the same amount as the PlayStation 3, which was dead on arrival, which was a flop for, like, the first year because of the crazy price that they came out with. So the fact that PlayStation 3 still ended up selling as much as the 360 is just, you know, it tells you a lot how people view Xbox around the world. I think it's really popular here in the United States. I think everywhere else, it's almost laughable how poorly it does. And I think that's why they're really trying hard to make a move that's going to get more people interested in owning an Xbox. You know, I noticed that they set up a social media page, and it's Xbox of Japan. And that's a marketplace they've really trying to been trying to break into, because they barely sell anything over there. You know, it and so they're really trying to create a presence over there. And I think, you know, acquiring more talented studios is going to help that tremendously. I just wonder what it's going to do for upcoming games, because it's like you're saying, they're going to honor current exclusivity. I'm sure there's games like Doom Eternal that's coming out on the Switch, games like that, they're going to be unaffected, you know. But I just wonder what it means going forward. And we've seen Microsoft, you know, they've taken some of their games that were exclusive to Xbox and eventually put them on other platforms. Now, I don't know if that's at the if that's the developer's choice or if that's Microsoft's choice. I would assume it's probably more of the developers. But now Microsoft, you know, it's a rare situation where, you know, why would they have... I mean, that's like, there's a lot of people are saying, you know, well, you know, the Switch is so, it sells so well, so why would Microsoft want to stop having Bethesda sell games on the Switch? But my argument with that is, you know, how does that benefit Microsoft? You know, the whole point is giving people a reason to buy Xboxes and also purchasing software for that system. So how does it benefit you to sell it on other platforms where people would go and say, well, I don't have to buy an Xbox anymore. I could just own the Switch version or the PlayStation 4 or 5 version, you know? And so, I wonder what it's going to mean for those games, but I err on the side of, I think Bethesda's games are, after, you know, whatever games were already announced, they're going to be exclusive to the Xbox. What is it? The Xbox One Series X? What's the new
system? No one knows what the Xbox is called.
I don't even know. Honestly, it's like, what's the current one?
It's the current Xbox Series X is the new one. The Xbox One X is the one before that. But yeah, they're all stupid names. I don't understand how anybody comes up with those names. But you know, all those billions of dollars can't get you a nice sounding Xbox. Just call it, call it Xbox 4, the, like, whatever number we're on.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I thought I saw there was like a dramatic sales boost of the One X whenever when the pre-orders went live for the new systems. Which, of course, is a lot of people are going to be very confused when they get their Xbox and don't know what it is. And I remember just buying a 360 somewhat recently and still being very confused about all the different editions of Xbox consoles. And I don't know. Some developers honestly thrive on confusion. I mean, there's also, you know, Spider-Man is on the PS5, but only under the condition that you buy Miles Morales and... pay an extra $20, and then but if you buy Miles Morales on PS4, technically you can move that copy to PS5, but then getting a lot of companies thrive on having like 15 different editions of their games and just like confusing you into spending the most money because you don't want to miss you don't want to miss. But yeah, speaking of this acquisition, I think it plays really well to Microsoft's base of fans. You know, you look at the franchises that have been incredibly successful for them in Halo and Gears of War, where you see the games that are associated with them. Fallout New Vegas was huge on the Xbox 360. Skyrim was obviously a gigantic juggernaut game, and in the generation that it came out, it ran like garbage on the PlayStation 3, and so it was most closely associated with the Xbox. And so I think this is a good fit. You know, Xbox has a primarily Western audience that likes Western RPGs, adult games, and you know, shooty games. And I don't think that this really gives them the sort of variety in their portfolio that I would want from them, but it definitely does give them an edge with that audience. And there's a lot of bleed over with the PlayStation audience there too. You know, the type of PlayStation guys who like stuff like Ghost of Tsushima or Last of Us. There is a lot of emphasis on these more adult RPG sort of games. And there's a bit of an arms race that's going on for exclusives. And instead of these weird games where Microsoft is going to like have it exclusive to the Xbox for 1 year and call it a world premiere at their show, they're just going to buy the company and be done with it. And I think this is a better strategy. These games also are very PC centric, so I think it'll play well to that. I think it'll, you know, really just boost the value of Game Pass, and I think that's ultimately the bigger play. I don't even think that we're necessarily going to stop seeing these games head to other systems. I think that the big get is getting them on Game Pass, but we'll see. We'll have to see what happens. They've gotten a lot less competitive over the years and have chosen to just kind of like find a different lane to work in instead of competing directly with PlayStation. And so you see a little bit of a difference in their strategy. Microsoft is banking on subscriptions. They're banking on cloud gaming. And while Sony has their feet in all of that, they're not pushing for it quite as hard. They are continuing to do that traditional console experience. And it's honestly great for all fans of games, because you're getting kind of the best of both worlds as long as you have the money to pay for all this garbage. Yeah. You know, you got the premier portable experience with Switch. You've got Game Pass and cloud gaming with Microsoft. And then you got the traditional console experience with PlayStation. I mean, it's kind of a nice time to be a game fan.
This doesn't
go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say that I mean, and honestly, you kind of mentioned something that I want to touch on. This is where I think, you know, even though this is a really good move for Microsoft, I also think it's a misguided move. And I say that because while it's incredibly awesome that they're gonna own Bethesda and so many great games are gonna be coming to their platform, I think it just kind of reinforces the audience that they already had. And to me, that's never been Xbox's problem, is all the people who love Xbox were going to buy an Xbox regardless, or they were going to play the games on PC, you know. But to me, like, Xbox's problem is that they haven't been able to broaden their audience. They haven't been able to bring in other people who enjoy other types of games besides, like what you said, very adult-themed games or Western RPGs or shooter games. And to me, you know, by like you purchased Bethesda, which to me is already a developer that makes the kind of games that the people on your platform already sign up to play regardless. So I just don't really see the value in it, I guess, from that perspective. Because we talk about all the time how Microsoft is just sitting on Rare and they have them do these games that you're just like, okay, that's cool, but why can't you make a Banjo-Kazooie game? Like, a Banjo-Kazooie game would bring in so many different people. I know I would buy an Xbox for that reason alone. And so you just think about it like that, and it's like, I understand the move, but at the same time, I'm like, man, you know, Bethesda already makes the type of games that people love to play on Xbox regardless. So is it really going to change that much? And that's why I think, you know, initially when the news came out that, you know, I thought it was a game changer, but the more and more I critically think about it, I'm like, I don't know, man. I think PlayStation's still going to blow them out of the water, to be honest. You know, especially because all the games you can get on the Xbox Series X, you can also play on your PC. And so, like,
yeah, that's always been my thing that's prevented me from getting an Xbox. You know, I was going to buy one for Battletoads, but I found out that I could just play it on my PC. And I did a $1 trial run of Game Pass. So I played that game for $1 on just my computer. Like, I don't even have a PC. I run a boot camp on a Mac, and I was just able to jump in. But I think that's the long game for Microsoft. I mean, Netflix has become such a juggernaut in the entertainment industry, and, you know, they don't have box office sales. They don't have DVD sales. They literally just have a small subscription that they have a lot of people pay for, and that's the type of stuff everybody's trying to get into. Every gigantic media corporation is trying to start some sort of streaming service right now for a monthly fee. And so I think it's smart for Xbox to pivot into that lane, because then having hardware doesn't even really matter as much. You know, with the right sort of talks With Sony, they could get Game Pass and xCloud on a PlayStation. They could get it on a Switch. And so they've got a nice backup plan if the console sales really failed. But I think at this point, the console is just kind of a, you know, the premier experience for playing a lot of those games. But yeah, I think they still got some work to do in providing a lineup that will attract new people to the Xbox. People that... you know, people like us that are not particularly interested in a lot of those games enough to buy a system. And I'm not even really all that convinced that the Elder Scrolls won't eventually find its way to PlayStation 5, because we've seen smaller Microsoft games make that jump, like like Ori. And so, you know, it's we'll see how it all plays out. And then, you know, like even at the end of the day, I wouldn't need to buy an Xbox. I could just subscribe to xCloud and play it on a web browser. Like, there's just a lot of options. But I don't think that they necessarily see that as a bad thing. But you know, obviously they would like to sell more consoles. So I think, yeah, they got to put in a little more work to get some younger eyes on the system. You know, Minecraft is great, but Minecraft is ubiquitous. You can find it anywhere. So that's not really going to drive people to Xbox. And then, you know, they're sitting on all these brands that could work really well. I think the way that they rebranded Battletoads is awesome, and they should keep on with that. They could, I don't know, make a Banjo-Kazooie game. Maybe they could make that, and that would, you know, get more of a general audience appeal for the Xbox. And then, of course, they've got that Japan problem. I looked up one of these articles because I was curious. So Famitsu tracks weekly system sales, and this was back in February of this year. Xbox One X consoles totaled for like 58. A 1S and 1X put together, which is like 10 times less than the new 2DS sold that same week in Japan. It's insane. Meanwhile, the Switch sold 45,000 units. So it's the lack of appeal in Japan is hilarious, and they keep trying to, you know, get back in that lane. They just had a big presence at Tokyo Game Show, where they announced Dragon Quest, the previously exclusive version that was on Switch, that whole definitive edition Echoes of an Elusive Age S. That's making its way to Xbox, which will look much better there than it did on Switch. And so that stuff's important, but if we get, you know, some, they need strong support and consistent support. They tried this back in the 360 with like a handful of exclusives. They didn't do particularly well, but like, you just got to keep feeding that fire with not even like Japanese centric games. I mean, you don't have to, you know, just put a bunch of JRPGs on there, but just Japanese friendly, you know, like stuff like Mario and Sonic is popular in Japan. It's not because it's like particularly catering to that audience, but just that it's not so American. And I don't mean that in like a bad way, but there's just like different things that fly here than in the East. But we'll see. We'll see. I mean, there's also those crazy rumors that people are reforming conspiracy theories that Microsoft is going to buy Sega. Now, that would be a big buy, because Sega, of course, has a gigantic Eastern presence. They have the IP in Sonic, Yakuza, Persona. Like, I mean, it'd just be a done deal after that. They would bring themselves right back center stage if they were to do something like that. But I don't think that's going to happen. And I mean, it technically could, because Sega is publicly traded, so it just takes enough money to do it. But I don't think that's going to happen myself. I don't think Sega would want to do that, so it'd be kind of like a corporate takeover situation. And you got to go into these things with everybody being happy about the transaction, or it just doesn't work out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so we'll see what comes out of this. I'm interested to see if it impacts the sales for the upcoming console, especially because with the Series X, they have the digital-only version that's $300 as opposed to PlayStation 5's being $400. But I just think, you know, most people want to own systems that are going to allow them to play physical games. I don't mind it personally, because I've kind of moved on to the whole digital thing. But I know most people are going to prefer that version. So I don't think people are going to really care about saving $200 to buy the digital only Xbox. And then at that point, it's the same cost as a PlayStation 5. That's why I think the Series X, they should have made the disc version $400. You know, if you undercut PlayStation $100, I think that would have made a big difference. But I think now, because both versions that play discs are going to be the same price, I honestly think PlayStation 5 is going to blow them out of the water. I mean, even with this Bethesda deal, I just don't think it's enough. I don't think Xbox has diversified enough or broadened their horizon as far as what software they're able to offer their customers, you know, in order to like attract new customers. Unless, again, unless you made a purchase like Sega, I think that would be a huge game changer. But I think this just kind of reinforces the fan base they already had, which it's like, you know, you don't need help selling to the same customers. You need help selling to new customers. And I think bringing a new Fable, you know, games like that, I think will make somewhat of a difference. But I just think, you know, they need more games like Battletoads, Fable, Banjo-Kazooie, you know, that are going to bring in a different audience. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens in November, though, but I am predicting a PlayStation 5 blowout.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, yeah, the writing's on the wall for this generation. Xbox One got clobbered. I mean, the PlayStation has already sold double what the Xbox One was able to do.
It didn't take long It didn't take long for the Nintendo Switch to outsell it either. I mean, that's what's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Xbox One came out in 2013. The Switch was 2017, and now the Switch has already passed it. But I also think the Switch is a freak of nature that has the potential to be the best-selling system of all time. It has the potential.
Yeah, it's it's on pace to be, so... You know, we'll see.
Well, yeah, we'll see. I mean, they'll have to, like, you know, continue to create excitement around around the system. But yeah, if you look at, like, the throne is PlayStation and Nintendo DS. But PlayStation 2, of course, famously sold that well because they kept it on the market forever. And it was honestly just, like, the cheapest entry-level DVD player that you could get at the time. And then... You know, the Nintendo DS was not far behind, and so if it could you know, pass that, that'd be crazy. And I think there's just a lot of power in handheld systems, which is why it's endlessly funny to me how Sony just kind of gave up on the Vita. They're like, oh, look, this, people just don't want a handheld, and they're like, no, people just don't want a handheld where the memory card is like just as expensive as the system, and you make it just a pain to work with. Oh, nobody was interested in texting from their PlayStation Vita. Oh, wow, what a surprise. Like, dude, we just want games. Anyway, but yeah, we'll see what comes of all this. I'm interested, but yeah, I think it just reinforces what they've got going on, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes you got to play to your base. So here's a small little note. Donkey Kong Country 2 is now out on Nintendo Switch Online. Go play it. That's all I have for that. One of the greatest games of all time. You should check it out if you haven't been able to play it, because now it's just there. I think for our last little story here, Matthew, we've got patents, more patents surfacing related to the Johto region, in that patents for Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver have been applied for in Japan. So this comes courtesy of JapaneseNintendo.com, link in the description to the original article. This comes on the back of recent filings for Entei. So something appears to be brewing in Johto. I mean, obviously, Pokemon is pretty formulaic at this point. Let's Go did very well, so you would assume that there's going to be a Let's Go series, and they'll just have the main series, the remakes, and the Let's Go's running concurrently. But I don't know. What do you make of all this?
Oh, I told you. This was my prediction for the longest. I mean, that's why it's funny to me. You and I had this conversation with Trevor before, and you guys both think that they would remake Diamond and Pearl like they originally did with Fire Red and Leaf Green, Heart Gold, Soul Silver, and then Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. But I think they ditched that whole idea once they moved onto the Switch and they did Let's Go and they reimagined Red and Blue. I think now, essentially what you're going to get is you're going to get a Let's Go game, then you're going to get your game like Sword and Shield, your new entry, and then you're going to get another Let's Go of the next generation. So I think I absolutely believe that there's going to be a Let's Go of Gold and Silver, and I think that's the trajectory they're going to follow. Is then after that you'll get the ninth generation, then you'll get Let's Go Ruby and Sapphire, then you'll get the 10th generation, so on and so forth. I think that's what they're going to do going forward, and I think it makes a lot of sense, and I'm really excited about it too, because you and I and Trevor have all talked, you know, and stated this a million times, but we feel like, you know, Pokemon's best days are behind it. And so to me, anytime you're bringing back the older games and making them new and fresh again, like, I'm all for it. And honestly, I liked Let's Go way more than I liked Sword and Shield. I mean, it's honestly crazy to me when I think about that I thoroughly enjoyed playing Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee as opposed to playing Sword and Shield. I just like the older Pokemon experience better. I like the art style that they went with better. I like that the Pokemon follow you around, not just in the wild area and at a really weird and ugly frame rate. And like, I just think overall, I just like the scale of that game better. I think it just really didn't try to do much. The only thing I wish with Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee is that you were actually able to play Red and your rival was Blue, but instead they made them NPCs that you encounter after you beat the game, which I thought was a cool and nice touch, but I would have rather just played the character instead of playing the like generic knockoff. But like I said, I'm really excited about that, especially because Gold and Silver was my favorite Pokemon game, and I absolutely, again, just to reiterate, loved Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee. So I know if I loved a reimagining of Red and Blue, I'm absolutely going to love a reimagining of Gold and Silver. And I think that coupled with the Entei trademark, there's, like you said, I definitely think there's something coming and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I mean, honest, I don't think that they're giving up on the remakes either. I think that there's going to be, this is just like a new pillar for Pokemon that I think in a 3-year rotation, or as close to a 3-year rotation as they can get, we would see a Let's Go, we would see a new entry, and then we'd see a remake, and then the cycle is reborn. But I don't know, it seems like the Let's Go versions are a little easier to make because you can, you know, obviously you're remaking a game from 20 something years ago, and you're not like adding a whole lot of space or depth or height to it. And I mean, that's the remake of Pokemon that I would really want, where I can, like, climb hills. Like, that's really all I'm asking, is some variety in the way that you explore the world. And, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Let's Go eats the remakes, but I don't think it will, because the remakes have always been this way to take all of your current assets, all of your current sprite work and all of that stuff, and just apply them to something where you don't have to think too hard about new Pokemon, new scenarios, or anything like that. So it's always worked great Leaf Green being one of the best remakes that we've ever seen done in the game industry, to Soul Silver, what's being trademarked here, being probably the king of all remakes that have ever happened. I mean, just the amount of like new features and new visuals and everything in that is just, I mean, mind blowing. Well, the only thing that I wish is that they would have made that after Black and White so that the sprites could be animated. But yeah, I mean, that was one of the greatest remakes of all time. And I don't think they're going to give up that lane either. I think Let's Go is just more so to get that integration with Pokemon Go and to create new fans of the series with a more casual experience.
Yeah, I mean, see, I just don't agree with that, only because I just don't think it makes sense. Like, let's say we get a Let's Go Gold and Silver, and then we get a remake of Diamond and Pearl. Well, then you're going to already be onto Let's Go Ruby and Sapphire, and then Let's Go Diamond and Pearl right after that. And I think you would just end up creating a lot of confusion in the marketplace, where, you know, you're going to get a remake of Diamond and Pearl, and then you're going to get a Let's Go version. Like, it's like, what in the world is the difference? And I honestly would be shocked if they still remade those games and then did Let's Go versions of those games. I just think at that point you're really going to confuse people and you're going to flood them with these, you know, which one is the remake, which one's the better remake, which one's the definitive version, you know. And I just think I don't know, I just can't really see it happening. But I do think, though, one thing I'm really excited about is when they eventually get to Let's Go Ruby and Sapphire, because I remember that's the thing with the older Pokemon games. While I prefer them, they had some of the most annoying HM obstacles where you always had to keep a not good Pokemon in your party to do the grunt work, you know, like to be able to break rocks or to cut down trees. But Ruby and Sapphire by far had the most annoying obstacles when it came to HMs, like diving and climbing up hills and do, or maybe you did that with the bike. I can't remember. But I just look forward to having a Let's Go style Ruby and Sapphire, especially where, like, now all of a sudden you don't have to worry about keeping a Pokemon in your party to deal with those things. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, if the Let's Go series continues, and I'm really hoping it does. But yeah, like I said, just on Diamond and Pearl, I just can't see, you know, unless, like, but even then, even if a Diamond and Pearl remake came out first, then you get Let's Go Gold and Silver. I mean, like, sure, theoretically, that could be years down the road, but I just think it, I don't know, I don't really see what sense that makes. But
well, it'd be at least 6 years and more likely something like eight years after the fact. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is the game industry we're talking about. Triple dipping on nostalgia is what we do. I mean, and if you think about it really like that hard, I mean, is it too soon for a Let's Go Johto, because we had Soul Silver, like, you know, a couple console generations before. And so, I don't know. I think I could see them running close to concurrently, and that there'd be enough of a gap to where there'd be a significant period of time before they got to Sinnoh. I also think that this the Let's Go thing could run out of steam after Johto, and it could be done after that, just because it's the type of idea that it is plays well to the casual Pokemon fan, the Pokemon fan that is more familiar with the phone games than they are with the main series. And I think once you get those guys in, that that there's not going to be that much more juice to squeeze from the idea, and that they might go back to the other style of remake. Because I could see them just dropping it after that. I mean, if you look at the sales numbers of the Pokemon games in general, of course, Kanto is king. The generation that came right after is pretty close, and then from there there's a pretty significant drop off until I believe it was Sun and Moon that almost came back and hit that. But I think also those numbers are kind of artificially inflated because that was the year that Pokemon Go came out, and it just reignited the Pokemon brand in a way that we thought we'd never see, where the Pokemania happened a second time. So, yeah, I mean, who knows what those guys are doing, though, man. I have such a passion and a longing for Game Freak to do amazing work, and I hope that they do. So to go back to your criticisms of Sword and Shield and how you liked Let's Go more, honestly, I might have to agree that Let's Go was just ironically, the second time they remade Kanto felt more fresh than an entirely new Pokemon game, because it was just like, I mean, the way that they changed the catching mechanics, the way that the Pokemon would like follow you around and you could ride on top of them. I mean, it was all pretty simplistic, but it was just different enough to get me feeling something new, instead of just like, well, you know, let's dive into the battle mechanics and the new base stats and the new priority mechanic. I mean, like, from a battling perspective, Sword and Shield is as great as Pokemon has ever been. It's incredibly interesting and fun to build teams and battle competitively. Everything else in that game felt a little bit lackluster and almost kind of laughable in the visual department. And so they've moved closer to Nintendo. I hope they're staffing up, and I hope they're just ready to give the series a big kick in the caboose and to make something truly special next time around. I hope they make it more of like a 5-year cycle than a 3-year. And Yeah, I don't know, man. I think this could be, this next Pokemon game could be the big game. They've had a couple Switch games under their belt in Let's Go and Sword and Shield. They've moved in closer with Nintendo. I'm sure that Nintendo and Game Freak noticed the criticisms of the last game, and I think they're ready to wow people next time around. Or a man can hope. A man can dream, Matthew.
We can all dream. I agree with that. And, you know, like I said, I mean, I didn't say this, but I wouldn't mind having a remake of Diamond and Pearl because it's a Pokemon game that I really enjoyed. But yeah, it'll just be interesting to see what comes out of that. But I'm more with you where I just want them to improve the quality of the games overall. I don't want another Sword and Shield. I mean, I really haven't loved Pokemon since Black and White. And that might sound crazy to some people. It probably sounds crazy to a lot of people. But for me, the series has just gone really stale just in terms of appearance, in terms of reused gameplay mechanics, in terms of uninspiring Pokemon designs, in terms of the art style they choose to go with now, just really down to everything. And so I think going back to the well of things that have worked before and remaking Gold and Silver with the Let's Go style, I think it would do really well personally. And like I said, I'd really be happy to see that. And then maybe they can focus on, you know, instead of doing a remake of Diamond and Pearl, you know, keep those little Let's Go games on the side while then working on a big new fulfilling Pokemon project. So yeah, we will see what
I want to go back to Diamond and Pearl again, just because I love that game so much. That's probably the Pokemon game that I spent the most time in, which is, you know, kind of a also just a comment on like, you know, how much free time I had in that period of my life. But yeah, I'd love to go back there, but the issue with, well, the issue and sometimes the benefit of these remade Pokemon games is that they're always anchored to the generation that was right before the remake. So like we had Ruby and Sapphire come out, and then we got Green and Red remade in that style, which I think worked really well. I mean, that style was awesome. And then we had Diamond and Pearl, which got remade into Heart Gold and Soul Silver, and that was just like, oh, chocolate and peanut butter, man. It was just amazing. All the new battle mechanics, the 3D stuff blended in with the sprites. It was all just amazing. But then when they finally remade Hoenn, we didn't get it in the black and white style that I would have probably lost my mind over, and it would have been one of my favorite games of all time. We got it in the X and Y style with that you know, kind of cheap chibi art style, and I just, it's the only Pokemon game I couldn't finish, Matthew. I've beaten every Pokemon game at least twice. Not that one. I've never seen the end of it because I can't do it. I can't do it. I get to Latias and I lose interest, man. The visuals and the style and just it's all quite blasé, and that would be my only like hurt in this being remade now is that we would get a Sword and Shield version of Sinnoh, and Sinnoh deserves better.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. But yeah, I mean I feel the same way about the Ruby and Sapphire remakes. It had me questioning if I actually liked Ruby and Sapphire, if it was just nostalgia or what have you. But it's funny because then I started watching YouTube videos on that game, and I'm like, it's crazy how just the art style change alone can make you look at a game completely differently. And that's why I'm excited to go back and play the Game Boy Advance version of Ruby and Sapphire. But yeah, the 3DS one was a slog, and really all the 3DS ones were. Like I said, the whole, ever since X and Y, to me, Pokemon just hasn't been the same, and so that's why I like the idea of going back and doing another Let's Go style remake, and then just kind of reinventing Pokemon as far as the new games are concerned.
Yep. Yeah, I kind of feel the same. I mean, I've stuck with the series the whole time, but if I were to mark a time when I got a lot less interested, it was after X and Y. There was this initial rush of like, oh my gosh, they're launching this game worldwide at the same time. It's not coming to Japan like 4 months earlier. there was excitement over the Pokemon being 3D, and that was the first time that they made those 3D models that they are still using to this day on the Nintendo Switch. That's where they first made them, so the animations and new models were actually pretty impressive back then, and then you could like customize your trainer for the first time. I mean, there was a lot of things going for 6, but after that, the veneer of everything being new faded. All we had was like a kind of uninspired Pokemon game. And I get it. They spent a lot of their work on doing all of those models. But yeah, and then Sun and Moon was pretty good. It's pretty good. A little better than sixth generation. And none of these games are bad. It's just that like Pokemon is such a special franchise. Obviously from the you know, amount of money that it makes, it's touched the heart of a lot of people. And so I think it's, you know, I hope they pull a Breath of the Wild on this one, in that like Zelda was getting pretty stale and crusty by the time that we got to the end of Skyward Sword, and they just breathed new life into it with Breath of the Wild, and hope there's a similar thing that happens here.
Agreed.
Well, that's going to be the end of this episode of We the People. Thank you so much for sitting here with us and indulging us in this conversation. Remember, Cotrello Games is now live on YouTube. We got a playthrough up for you. Go check that out and subscribe to that channel. Also, if you like this podcast, leave us a nice review with as many stars as you can fit into it on your podcast service of choice. But until next week, keep doing whatever you do throughout the week. Goodbye.